Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deborah Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk is one of the shows featured on CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. CSNP has a lineup of rotating shows throughout each month. Mondays feature Lunatic Mondays with host Laura Gonzalez. It can't be Tuesday without Circle Talk, and I continue to be the host for this fun discussion show on the first and third Tuesdays of each month. Wednesdays features Circle of Nature with none other than Selena Fox. The third Friday of each month features Blue Marble, an eco-educational, eco-activism, and eco-spirituality podcast. We have such a fun and informative lineup of shows, and we here at CSNP hope that you try them all. Tonight on Circle Talk, we'll be chatting with Lisa McSherry about her new book, A Witch's Guide to Cracking Your Practice. It's a self-paced guide to the fundamentals of witchcraft, which includes topics like creating an altar, tools of the craft, creating rituals and spells. This book features a progressive series of lessons that are perfect for the beginner, but they're also a great refresher for the experienced magical practitioner. Lisa McSherry is an author, priestess, and world traveler. As a leader of Jagger Moon Coven, she has been teaching the basics of witchcraft since 2000. She's also the author of The Magical Connections, Creating a Healthy and Lasting Spiritual Group, and The Virtual Pagan 2.0. Lisa is a popular presenter at conferences and has been featured on many pagan podcasts and is the founder of the website facingnorth.net. For more information, please go to her website, lisamcsherry.com. That is LISAMCSHERRY.com. Welcome, Lisa, to Circle Talk.
Thank you. It's so wonderful to be here.
Oh, well, I'm really excited, and I was very fortunate to get a copy of your book, so I'm very, very excited about having you on. I really enjoyed it. Tell our listeners, when was your, because your book is newly published, is it not?
It is. It came out in October of 22.
Oh, that is great. And it is not your first book. You have been sort of a prolific writer. This is, how many books have you written?
Technically, I've written five. One is currently making the rounds of the publishers looking for a home.
There you go.
which I almost don't want to talk about too much because it is looking for a home.
We'll just have you back.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. But Crafting Your Practice was book number four for me.
That's great. What was the inspiration for writing this book?
Well, honestly, I hit my 20th year of teaching through Jaguar Moon Coven, and in the year 2000, and I kind of looked up and said, you know, there's no way that everyone who I would like to be able to go through our program will go through our program. I mean, it's a year-long cycle. Not everyone has that much time. And, you know, it does cost money, although not that very much. So, you know what? I wonder how this would look as a book. And so I spent about a year taking a vast pile of knowledge and sort of drilling it down to what turns out to be five very core practices for, you know, getting a spiritual practice together. And it is based on a witchcraft framework, the neo-pagan framework, because that's my background and training.
Right.
But it's really applicable for anybody who wants, you know, who's interested in doing something outside of mainstream religion and feels more than a little overwhelmed by the vast amount of information, quote, out there. Much of it contradictory, you know, just based on personal gnosis, which has a place, but you, if you don't know that, then you don't really know how ungrounded you are in your, in what you're reading. And so I kind of boiled it down to what is it that you really need to get something done? And that's where the book came from.
So how did this path begin to you? Did you grow up pagan? Did you Is witchcraft in your family? Have you always did this?
Oh, no. My family background is primarily Catholic. We've got Polish Catholics mm-hmm. on one side and Irish Catholics on the other. And while I will joke that, you know, Catholics are one step to the left of pagans.
I kind of believe that too. Catholic is in my family too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, because of all the ritual and the saints mm-hmm. and such like that. You know, it isn't the same thing. My parents, actually, when I was growing up, were actually agnostic or atheist. But I found witchcraft when I was in my teens. Mm-hmm. And for me, very much so, that was life-saving, quite literally, as well as mm-hmm. life-transforming. Because it was coming home. I recognized everything that I was reading and doing as what I wanted to be and do in the world. Mm-hmm. I really felt so strongly that witchcraft was giving me the power that I needed to have in my life. At a time in my mm-hmm. life when, you know, as every adolescent feels, completely powerless and out of control, mm-hmm. and, you know, the world gone crazy sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a joke, sort of, but witchcraft saved my life. And mm-hmm. I have never looked back in the many decades since then.
That's so fun. I'm so interested because I also discovered this path when I was 14. At a Walgreens store, and I still have it, this little paperback book, which if you read it now, so that was probably, it was in the 70s. So if you read it, that book would have nothing to do with my spiritual practice now, but the idea of female deity, a goddess, really turned mm-hmm. something for me. And so it was that little book. How did you find it as a teenager? Did you meet somebody, or that's just interesting?
It was actually my mother's copy of A Spiral Dance by Starhawk.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun.
It is. It's so perfect in so many ways. And my mother had the book because it was a feminist book.
Right.
And, you know, my mother was a feminist, and that was what her local cohort was working on to be more empowered. And mm-hmm. she just, you know, she read it and did the thing and then put it up on the shelf. And I was bored one day and was like, what's this red book? Huh? Whoa. And that was it completely. She never got that copy back.
Oh, that's fun. That is fun. Well, again, your book is kind of divided up in two sections, foundation and practice, which I really like. And something that I found interesting is I know that you told me that you sort of said this is a great book for beginners. I also think it's a great refresher source for people who are experienced magical practitioners, just to, mm-hmm. you know, the way you've laid it out. And I really like that. And you talked about the five core practices. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. For me, you know, the book itself has more than just five chapters. Like you
right.
said, it's split into two sections, the sort of getting started part and then the practice
right.
part.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the practice part that I sort of move away from when I talk about the foundation, because
right.
you know, when you get into the practice side of witchcraft, there's almost a, you know, some people never do magic,
right.
even though they call themselves witches. Some people
right.
only do magic and never do, you know, deity, you know, so
right.
there's, you know, we have a broad group of people who would call themselves
right.
something akin to witch. So for me, the first practice is really writing it down, you know, the
mm-hmm.
classic, get out your book of shadows, you know, get out your notebook. It doesn't have to be fancy, but you know what, if you want to do this, you need to start writing down why you want to do this, what you want to
mm-hmm.
get out of it, what it means to you to be a witch. I mean, this is a great question to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you want to be whatever you were, you know,
mm-hmm.
what your family of origin religion was, or what you've been
mm-hmm.
for the last 10 years, or you know, have something as a starting point, because guaranteed 6 months after, you are going to have different answers and a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know where you started from, you will not recognize the progress that you're making. And it's just, you know, humans, we're really bad at seeing things that are important in some ways, right? But also, we're really good at making connections that may or may not be there. And if you're not kind of tracking things, you won't know that certain elements keep coming up in your life, certain themes keep up coming up in your life, you know, like, you know, those are messages. And, you know, if you see a raccoon the same day at the same time, you might want to pay attention, right? So, so those kinds of things, sort of keeping track of it, is always the really most important part. Also, and I, by the way, am a huge fan of keep track in your notebook, actually writing things down by hand, putting pen to paper, which I know makes some people in your audience go, no, I never do that. And believe me, I totally understand. My keyboard and I are one for much of my life.
But it's a different energy. It's a really different energy when you write it down.
It is. It is, very much so. And it creates different patterns in your brain because we so rarely write things down nowadays that when we do, one of the things that happens is that your brain says, oh, this is important. I should pay attention. And that does many things energetically as well as, you know, realistically. And, you know, and science has proven this. You don't have to just take my word. Writing things down is different. You'll remember things differently if you write them down. And you'll have a thing. You'll have a thing. So, and the book talks a lot about how you don't have to get hung up on how the book looks, and some ideas for getting past blockages on you know, getting paralyzed by it's not as creative.
It's your book. It's your book. Right.
Yeah, exactly. My books are very, well, I will now confess, my handwriting is terrible, and there are portions of my Books of Shadows that I have gone back to and said, I have no idea what I wrote here.
Isn't that funny? Because I don't have the best handwriting sometimes either, and people are probably going to think my books are in Theban, but that's actually just my handwriting. It's just really bad. Yeah. I've done that too. I do that with workshops that I will write. I'll take shortcuts because I'm writing so much. And then it's so frustrating because I've starred something that's a great point, and I really don't understand what I'm even talking about. So, Exactly. And you do a really good job throughout the book. Again, there's a good beast talking about a Book of Shadow or a grimoire, what's included. But as you go through the different chapters in your book, you say, write this in your journal, note this, you know, experience this and write it down. You do kind of a ribbon weave throughout your book of reminding people to utilize that skill set.
Exactly. Because it's fundamental. I mean, I've been a witch for 40 odd years. I have tubs of these books because I have written in them. And I'll confess right now, there were times when I didn't write things down for a while, and I regret bitterly not having that information from that time. I really do. But the to go on, the second core practice really is to then create sacred space. And for me, that's creating an altar. And an altar is just a flat spot that you go to somewhere in your private space every day. You just show up. And later there are things you can do there, you know, and how you express your altar. But the step, the practice itself is to go there and start creating that resonance of this is a special space. This space is different from all the other space I inhabit in my life. And you You begin to set up the resonance again. You begin to set up the, this is different. Your brain starts recognizing, when I'm here, I do different things. I am mm-hmm. not in the mundane world. You start creating the sacred. And what the sacred is different for people. We could all agree on many, many things, but for what you actually do and place on your altar, you know, mm-hmm. your altar, I'm sure, Deborah, is completely different from my altar.
Right.
You know, and I just spent, I've moved to a new country in 22, and I spent mm-hmm. basically a year without an altar
mm-hmm.
at all because of how my lifestyle. Oh, it was amazing. Yes, it was fascinating. It's actually kind of part of the new book project because of what I learned with it. But,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I just had my portable altar. I mean, I had my little mm-hmm. travel things. I had makeshift things that I would just sort of do on the run with whatever mm-hmm. was available. And
mm-hmm.
I was real open to what the different energies were, and it was quite fascinating what did and didn't work. It all worked, actually, in the end. It all worked.
Mm-hmm.
But the degree to which it worked varied, which was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
so, but having the sacred, having that place.
Yeah, and I know many people, I know I have a really close friend who lives by herself, and she basically has I call it a magic room. It's stunning, and she has this huge altar that she leaves out all the time, and not all of us have houses that can accommodate that. So I kind of learned, and you can tell me what you think about this. You can have something as simple as a shelf, and you can have items on there that you don't have to have a huge pinnacle. You can have items of nature, things on there that become your altar, a candle that nobody would even, it would be incognito. People wouldn't even know about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Most of my life, my altar would not look like an altar to anybody outside of knowing me because that's how I am. That's part of my way in the world. And also you can also have your entire altar in a box, shoebox, for example, that you only take out when you are in your sacred space.
Right.
And then put all back and put it away. I mean, when I lived with other people, that frequently was what I ended up doing because, you know, none of us wanted our religious practices to intrude on anyone else.
On
so,
each other. Right.
Yeah, it's polite, you know, necessarily. And, you know, and then you also keep it safe. Oh, and then there's when you have cats. Sometimes mm-hmm. you just don't want things for the cats to knock off.
Absolutely. And cats are drawn to flame. I will tell you that right now.
Oh, yes, they are. Oh, yes, they are. And then the practices actually move more into starting to define how you are in terms of energy work. And sort of the step beyond before that, if you will, is creating a meditative practice.
Mm-hmm.
Getting, you know, going to the sacred space and then spending time there, you know, being quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And which is often the place where people go, oh, no, never mind. I have no time for that. My brain never shuts off. That'll never work. And what I'm here to say is that after 20 plus years of listening to my students tell me that at the beginning of the month that we spend on meditation, yes, your brain will quiet. Yes, it does work. Yes, there are tried and true practices and techniques that will get you to that quiet. But you do have to show up. And you do have to try, and you have to give it your best effort, and it will work, I promise.
And there are different types of meditation. So something works for you may not work for me, but it's altering a state of consciousness, and you just have to do. And it's funny, I don't know if this is true for most people, but I realize that the gods only speak to me in the quiet. They whisper. So if I don't quiet my mind, I don't ever talk to anybody. So absolutely, and I'm one of those people that get monkey mind, and that's very hard. So for me, I started out with guided meditation and things that helped me focus, mantras, affirmations, you know what I mean? I needed something to focus that I don't do mindfulness meditation where I just, you know, they say you should be able to sit in a crowded subway and feel like you're on a mountain. That is really difficult for me. But there are other types of meditation that I do. And again, it has become a normal practice because that's where, and it's funny for me, and I don't know if I'm just odd. When I meditate, I typically won't have insight then, but I'll dream that night and I'll wake up and I'll know the answer.
Oh no, because I mean, that's actually really classic because when, what you're doing when you're meditating is you're giving your space, your brain space to begin to listen for the answer or information or the conversation. And then, you know, but processing that, you know, doesn't happen for you until you're dreaming, until you're really quiet. And your unconscious can kind of step forward and say, you know, hands on hips, look, do you not get it? Here.
Exactly. Exactly. How many times do you have to reincarnate for the same lesson is I'm sure what my guides say to me.
And I think the meditation part is in fact the part of when, particularly in this modern age, I mean, it's so noisy in so many ways. It's really hard to get away from, you know, these wonderful little devices we call phones and, you know, social media and all these things. There's lots of distractions. All the more reason why we need to give our brains quiet time. I mean, it's like a child needing a nap. Just put him down for a little while.
And I have found that I am, which is probably one of the reasons I was drawn to this path, I'm a very ritualistic creature. So for me, I mean, again, if I have a quiet moment, like I'm traveling this week, I can do that. But what really works for me is to make it spiritual in nature, quiet, darker room, candle, incense, maybe soft music. It kind of tells my consciousness we're getting ready to do something spiritual and important, and it helps get me in the mood to do that.
Absolutely. I call it getting in a ritual frame of mind.
Absolutely.
And it's all when we're going to do practice, our magic, when we're going to talk to our deity, getting in a ritual frame of mind is just, you know, sort of stepping just one step to the side of consciousness and entering another reality, which I think is actually one of the more amazing things about being a witch is that we can do that. That doesn't mean other people can't. You don't really find it in mainstream religions. That's, you know, that's part of why my framework is very, this is a powerful way of working through the world. This is, you have control over far more than you feel like you do. This is, this is a way to actually be active in a world that wants you to be not reactive and passive. So, you know, you can sort of take control and such like that. And then the other parts of the practice are actually creating your practice. I mean, do you want to talk to deity? Do you talk to deity? Is there a particular one? Finding a deity, if you're interested in that. It's another thing, actually, though, I love about witchcraft is you can actually do witchcraft. It all works and does not require deity. And, you know, if you're I have plenty of students over the years. My partner, in fact. Very on the fence as to whether deity even exists. And, you know, it's like, yes, it does for me. If it doesn't for you, let's talk in terms of energy. You know, let's talk in terms of what you're connecting to.
Who have practiced for a while and didn't really work with deity and used witchcraft as the practice and did not get into the spiritual aspect. And deity reached out to them. So it's just kind of interesting that, and it wasn't quick. It was, you know, they've been doing this for a long time, very successful. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh dear, you know. So it's just interesting. So and again, I think it's being open to that. I tell my students that all of this is like, you know, a muscle or, you know, riding the bike, you get rusty. If I haven't exercised for a long time, I mean, I know how to do it, but I'm not real good at it. And so when you do this practice, it becomes smoother, and I think you get benefits that I think that those energetic roadmaps are set, and I think you get insight, mm-hmm. and I think deity mm-hmm. reaches out to you, and I just think that there's such a benefit of making this simply a part of your life.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I absolutely agree. I am a proponent for witchcraft.
mm-hmm. And I think your book, again, I think your book is a really good way for people, especially if they're new. But like I said, I've been doing this for a lot, and there are things that I found interesting and that I didn't know, and it was a great refresher to think about. So I think that I just think your book should be on everybody's bookshelf. So I agree.
I
think it was really good. I think it's a really good way to. But I think something, I will tell you, and I wanted to find out what made you do this because I found it so interesting. There's a lot of beginner witchcraft books, and they give you information, mm-hmm. and then it's kind of there. And, again, I also teach, and I have many students who have read every book there is on candle magic but haven't really ever touched a candle. So your book, you give information, and then you give activities. Because sometimes I think people have that hard time going across that bridge from in their head to their hands. And I think a lot of people in our faith are all in their head. And so you really give a lot of things to do to put that knowledge in action, which I found very useful. So tell me about how you came up with that. It's very clever.
Well, I mean, you put it really well. It's most of us spend a lot of time in our heads. And for me, witchcraft is a practice. It's an active way of participating. I have a hard time imagining an armchair witch, you know, mm-hmm. basically. And there are people who only read and only talk about mm-hmm. magic and witchcraft, and, you know, there's a place for that, sure. For me and for what I teach and how I see, you know, witches moving through the world, No. It is taking ownership. It is taking personal responsibility and then doing things, because we're humans and we do things in the world. So why not do the things with intention? Why not pay attention to what we're doing, which are slightly different things, and, you know, make what we do magical even when it feels very mundane? I mean, you know,
It's fun.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No,
exactly.
It's fun.
Besides
working, it's fun. It makes your life feel enchanted. At least it does me.
Exactly. And it doesn't mean everyone has to be a kitchen witch. Or whatever, one of the labels that are out there. It just means, you know, okay, so if a core tenet of witchcraft, as I believe, is that we are trying to kind of get in tune with the natural energy and cycles, but mostly the natural energy that is all around us, then mm-hmm. the act of writing a letter, the act of going shopping and selecting food, the, you know, all of the normal actions of life, taking the bus on your commute, okay,
mm-hmm.
All of these things can be sacred to a certain
mm-hmm.
degree, but at the least they can be done with intention.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're not just tuning out and stepping to the side. So, yes, my way of being a witch isn't just, you know, I look a certain way, or I have certain kinds of jewelry, or
mm-hmm.
there's a shelf in my room where I put stuff that makes me feel witchy. I mean, all those things are kind of beginner steps, you know, if that's what
mm-hmm.
brings you into a place, then that's great. But the doing magic
mm-hmm.
is where we become witches, because it's a craft.
Mm-hmm.
It is
mm-hmm.
a practice. So everything, so it's, yeah, exactly, as I'm going through, and this is how we teach our class as well, everything that you learn, you do. There mm-hmm. has to be a practical component, you know, because otherwise it is all just in your head, you know, and that works to some degree, but it's not what I do and how I see it,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
With a recognition, by the way, that magic is work. You know, unlike
right.
Hollywood, we don't just snap our fingers and
no.
things happen. We have to put no. in resources. We have to make sacrifice. And we have to know what it is that we are trying to accomplish with our magic. And living a life that has that supports that intention is also part of having, you know, a magical life, a sacred life. I mean, it's all very well, you know, to say that you are going to give up chocolate, for example,
mm-hmm.
but if your house is filled with chocolate, you're going to struggle.
Right.
You're really going to struggle.
Right.
So, yeah.
And again, and I think that's more of a shift than in decades past, but I know it was a shift for me because for a long time, it was like magic was something that I either, as you said, decided to create some space. I did, or I did with a coven, and then that was done. I put that up, and so the next time I wanted to do magic, and now it's just interweaved within my life. And it's funny, I just taught a class, and I used the example, you know, you've done the mundane work, you did a resume, you've gotten that job interview, it went great. Now you have a second interview. What can you do magically for it?
Mm.
And people were like, I don't know. I'm like, yes, you do. What color could you wear? What scent?
Mm-hmm.
What stones do you put in your pocket? Do you know what I mean? So when you start
mm-hmm.
thinking and talking about it, then you realize it's really easy to incorporate it in your life if you just think about it. But I think a lot of us didn't kind of grow up in this path that way. Do you know what I mean? And so I think this is a real shift. And so I think that's why books like yours really help.
Good. I would hope so. I mean, really, for me, I write because I figure there's at least one person out there who will read it and go, ah, that's it. Thank you. That was the thing I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and many people apparently have read the book and really, really like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if anyone's listening and you've read it, write a review on Amazon, please. Thank you. There's my plug. because it makes a difference to how people see you. But I feel like I've reached out to a number of people, and I hope that this sort of sense of, you know, yes, it's work, but you can do it. You can achieve it. I mean, there's always a unique way that we could figure out to make something work for somebody that otherwise isn't going to happen. And kind of going back
That's
to the
cool.
meditation, there's a ton of meditation styles. I know,
mm-hmm.
you know, my students do moving meditation. You know,
mm-hmm.
some like to sit and stare at a candle. Some have to,
mm-hmm.
you know, whirl around a room, you know, listening to
mm-hmm.
music. It's like whatever
mm-hmm.
gets you there. I don't care.
Absolutely.
I have no judgment about it. And that's the other thing is a lot of us have a lot of judgment about, are we doing it
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And it's sort of my secret reason for this. Exactly. Exactly. And I really wanted Crafting Your Practice to come across as, you know, look, here is a time-tested, well-worn practice, and if you need to tweak it to make it work for you, go for it. You know, I have no judgment about whether you are doing it right or not. You can call yourself a witch
mm-hmm.
and never do magic. I have no judgment
mm-hmm.
about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but here's what you can do to go further and do more
Absolutely.
Than you think perhaps is possible.
Absolutely. And you do a good job. Like I said, I also will have you know, I do the same thing. When I start classes with magical practice, I start with the basics, and you did a really good job. Energy work, meditation, grounding and centering, visualization. And people will say, oh, I don't want to do that basic stuff. I want to do magic. And I'm like, okay, if you can't do those things, magic won't come. You have to do those. And so I think you do a really good job of doing that. Something I found interesting – explain to our listeners what anchoring is.
Yes, anchoring is the process of actually connecting yourself. Anchoring, it's in the word itself. You are connecting
right.
yourself to something to keep you from astrally floating off into, you
mm-hmm.
know, the other realms. And it's different from grounding, which has its own process to it. It's different from centering.
Right.
They're all related, but anchoring is like, it's that little hook you kind of just put into the physical
mm-hmm.
so that no matter what's going on, you're still connected.
Mm-hmm.
Basically. So, yeah. And it's, yeah, that's sort of a tricky one. And actually looking back, that's kind of almost an advanced thing. I should have just stepped
to
grounding
and centering.
Oh, no, I
thought it was really good. And I thought it was interesting. And I may add that to that concept because I really, really liked it. So, said, it was really good. And you even had, and this is something that I've only recently heard about. You also have some in your book and, I can't remember the name of it, but there's a group of people who physically cannot visualize in their mind. And you
yes,
give them ways to work with that. And I have just recently heard that. About that,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know that was an actual mm-hmm. thing, but apparently it is.
Yeah, I've had some students over the years who have come to me and said, I'm so frustrated because you do these beautiful guided meditations when we do ritual, and they're just words to me. I don't go there, and you know, and they're really rightfully quite frustrated. They don't see
right,
And because of them, I actually went out and looked, and there is a psychological state that
mm-hmm.
Is called asthenesia, I think it is. I'm going to get that wrong.
That's fine.
But yeah,
but
it's
I just
literally
heard it's actually a real thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's actually a real thing. It's like they just don't see. So I have started to incorporate, you know, what does it feel like? What does it sound like? What does it smell like?
Because
those things
right.
can guide
I thought that
you
was
along.
Really good.
It's fascinating. Yeah, I go back to, it may not be working for you. Find the thing that does work for you to get you to the same place. You know, the guided meditations still work, but
mm-hmm.
you know, what's going on, what's what you are going to be guided by can be different than words.
Right. And you'll have a different experience, but it's, you do a good job of saying, but it's still a valid experience.
Yes. Yes. There are many, many paths to the top of the mountain that we call, you know, enlightenment or perfection
right.
or
right.
a better self. Many, many paths. I am not about one true way. I
mm-hmm.
just don't think there is one, you know.
Yeah. I don't. Yes. I totally agree with you. And I was going to give our, listeners an example of an activity that I have actually done, and you did a really good job with it, is that you say an activity when you talk about elements is to work with one element for a week. And I did mm-hmm. something similar many years ago. And again, you do just a really good job of talking about thinking about the colors of that element, wearing clothes in that color. You know, one of the things I did was, you know, try to experience as many forms of it as you can. Does it feel different in an ocean than it does in a lake? I mean, I thought that was something that, again, people will read books about elements, but to take that step and then to, again, you remind your readers to journal what your experiences are,
mm-hmm.
I think that really helps them understand what elemental energy is.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And, you know, if it helps, well, one of the models I've been working with recently is just keep thinking of it as creating relationships. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you can stand in circle with someone and you only see them once a month at a full moon.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. You do ritual, you know, that's fine. Or you can get to know them outside of ritual, go have coffee, maybe go to a movie,
mm-hmm.
hear some music, and, like, talk to them. What's important to them? What do they want to know? What's important to you? What shared values do you have? Creating
mm-hmm.
relationships with, you know, the powers and beings that you are working with is just kind of a good idea.
Right.
You know, it only does you both better. And sometimes
right.
those relationships, like any, are just kind of like, all right, I really only want to see you once a month.
Right.
As it turns out, we don't have anything in common, but, you know, it's okay. And other times it's like,
now you know.
Oh, we're going to move in together, aren't we?
Yeah.
Mhm.
Yeah, I really like that. That's a really good way to a good way to put it. And again, I think magic is layers, and I think the benefit of what you put in is what you get out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the more you work with it, again, I think it creates an energy pathway, and it just becomes easier. So
mm-hmm. very much
yeah.
so.
And that
yeah,
makes
very much
self knowledge. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Even
mm-hmm.
and you talk in your book about different ways to raise energy. Just I have met, in fact, my partner when I first met him said, you know, I don't think I feel energy. And that's because he was expecting fireworks all the time.
Yeah.
And so we did the ball and we did these exercises. And he goes, well, I feel that. I go, that's energy. He goes, really? I go, yeah. You're expecting, you know, the heavens
mm-hmm.
open and fireworks every time. And that's not necessarily what energy is. So, yeah, I think
mm-hmm.
a lot of people, again, I think that's why, as we talked about, getting out of your head and doing things kind of
mm-hmm.
makes other things click. Do you know what I mean? Once you've had
mm-hmm.
one experience, then it kind of makes the rest of the book make sense. That's why I think the activity portion of your book is so valuable.
Exactly. And that was the thing I struggled with because in our online class, for example, you know, students do, you know, a full moon ritual with us within a month of starting
right.
the class. And we start in November, so then they'll also do Yule really, really
mm-hmm.
quickly. And you know, so here they are, they're telling us what they think magic is, and we're talking about what that is. We're getting to know each other. They've sort of started to do some meditation and visualization, and boom, we just throw them right into ritual. And
mm-hmm.
the first ritual, we don't let them take any roles, but starting
mm-hmm.
with the second ritual and all through the year, we encourage them to take roles. It's like take a quarter
mm-hmm.
call, take, you know,
right.
speak these lines, you know, be a participant. And
mm-hmm.
so many times they're like, I don't know how to do that. We're like, it's okay.
Right.
Just, you know, just do it. Start doing
right.
it. And, you know, we'll talk and we'll see. And it's completely different because, you know, by the time they get halfway through the year, they are participating. They're doing magic. They're working
mm-hmm.
energy. It wasn't just something that they read about. And it sets the tone
mm-hmm.
and sort of gives them that core to go on with.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, actually, the first half of the year is sort of the big exciting part. And then after that, it's more, all right, so let's talk about divination.
Right. It's
know,
work.
The
yeah.
other practices.
Yeah. Yeah, that is funny. And people, it's funny because people participate, do quarter calls and do certain things. And lots of times in class, I will have an after the ritual talk, and I will talk about the things mm-hmm. that went great. And it's funny because I'll talk about the things that my partner and I, we messed up or didn't go as planned. And it's
mm-hmm.
funny because what I've learned is nobody knows. If you're comfortable and you're doing and you're connecting, some of the rituals that I thought that was terrible, I've had people come up to me and say, that was the most meaningful thing in my life. And so you just never know
oh, yeah.
what you're going to do that's going to connect to somebody else because of what they need at that time in their life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, that happens to me all the time. People will cry because of what happened with them in the
right.
guided meditation, and they'll be so emotional. And I'm
right.
like, okay, that wasn't there for me. But all right, I'm glad I gave you that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and again, I remember the first time I went to group ritual. I mean, I was so intimidating and had the imposter syndrome, like, oh my gosh, these are real witches and I'm not. So yeah, I think that's just, so I think that's great that you have them do it because the fear goes away really quickly once you've done your first quarter call, then you can do quarter calls. Now it's something else. So I think that's a really great experience.
Talk
about that. You mentioned it several times. Tell us about Jagger Moon Coven.
Jagger Moon Coven is my coven. we've been around since the year 2000, so we're sort of old at this point in terms of how long covens work. And
seasoned, not old, seasoned.
Yeah, seasoned, exactly. And, you know, we're actually going through sort of an interesting shift right now. We have been for several years now, and I think we're almost finished. You know, like many covens, we started out as a hierarchy. I was the leader. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, people reporting to me, blah, blah, blah. You know, hierarchy structures are great for getting things done and getting things started. But, you know, not, I'd always had this idea that if I ran a coven, I didn't want it to be a hierarchy. I wanted it to be a different model, but I didn't like the model of the circle. Because the circle was a little too fluid, a little too unstructured, and so I began to work with this idea of creating a wheel, where there'd be somebody in the center as the hub, and then members of the covenant for us are the spokes, and then the class we teach is the rim.
Right.
You know, good and tight. And we replace the rim every year. You know, we actively have this sort of disruption that we go through every year. And, you know, these people along the spokes take roles and do different things. And it's been an interesting process to shift, you know, to change the mindset and change the habits of the hierarchy and move into a different scenario. But we're doing it because, you know, eventually I'm not going to be the leader of Jaguar Moon anymore. And we have to go there. So it's been really creative this last couple of years, and I'm very excited about who I'm working with and where it's going to go. And I'm very excited to see what they do without me in charge, which is
so
sort of the best part ever.
Is it like, is the coven located geographically where you live, or?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Yes. No, we are an entirely cyber coven.
Really?
We have been
okay.
practicing online for our entire existence. So we are everywhere.
That is very interesting. Okay.
It makes some things different from how traditional models. Many things are easier. We had no problem, for example, practicing and teaching and doing everything we normally do all during the pandemic because we were already set up for it. And, you know, right now I live in Portugal, and most of the members are in Canada and throughout the United States at this point. So we are truly international.
That's really fun. So if folks read your book and they're interested, do you take students or do you take students? How do you get students?
We do take students, actually. There's an application process throughout the month of September, and then in early October, we go through the applications and decide who's a good fit, and then the class actually starts the first week of November and lasts for an entire year.
Are they only in your coven during classes, or do people stay in the coven, or is it just a teaching coven?
No, we are primarily a teaching coven, but we get new coven members. You have to go through the class first because it's what we teach, so you have to know what we teach.
Absolutely.
And we have no expectation that every student is going to become a coven member. That would be ridiculous. But a number do every year, so we grow slowly but surely, and, you know, so we can take more students. The larger the coven, the more students we can take. And that's really our ratio. We don't, none of our mentors has more than two students at any given time, period. It's too, we like to have a personal focus and, you know, that connection, you can always reach out to somebody. So it's very exciting. I love it. I love how we teach. We are not flashy. We are not expensive. We are not, you know, I don't know, 44 courses for $44. You know, there's all sorts of models for teaching out there. It's like, you know, we have a process at the end of the year. Anybody who's gone through the year with us can confidently work with any other group because they've got all the basics down, and or on their own, you know. And if they join another group, they know what to look for, and they can, they know what toxic leadership looks like, and they'll know what they want.
I mean, that's really, I mean, that's exciting. I mean, that is nice. Well, let me ask you this, because I found this interesting. I think that's very interesting that you're so quiet. You've been doing this for 20 years. And a lot of people don't know you're like a wonderful secret. How has the internet changed witchcraft, do you think? I mean, obviously, for me, a big benefit is your group that people who live in rural areas or areas where they don't know other people can connect. What kind of changes have you seen?
Well, so I wrote a whole book. It's called The Virtual Pagan 2.0.
Anyway. All right.
And because it is a vast subject, and I think as we sort of run out of time here at the end of our hour together, I think that we all saw during the pandemic that although for years people had said you can't actually teach magic online, yes, you can.
Yeah.
People had said you can't do ritual online, yes, you can. You can't connect energetically online, yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
It's different. Yeah. It's
right.
Very different in some cases. It's not easy in most cases. It's a different shift of reference. But that's magic. You know, going back to your partner, you know, if you get, you know, energetic bells and whistles from working in a physical group, you are very not likely to get that in an online group. The energy is far more subtle and far more lower in ratio, shall we say.
Right.
But it's there. I mean, I've been doing magic for 20 years. I'm happy with, I mean, I would have given this up. I'm too practical if it didn't work.
Right.
You know? So yeah, I think there's a vast realm for what people are doing online. And I'm interested to see who's come up with some things that they're going to share after the pandemic. You know,
right.
So I'm not the only one saying, hey.
And I think that connections, because at least from my experience, paganism and witchcraft was very geographical based. Like I may be Alexandrian or a Druid or a Gardnerian based because that's what was in my local area. Do you know what I mean? And I think the internet opened up paths and connections. You know, I had a great relationship with someone who lived in Australia. So, I mean, it's just, for me, I think the connection is such a benefit that I don't think the horse is out of the barn that will ever go back.
So. I absolutely agree. There are people, I literally everyone I know in the coven, I never would have met had we not connected online.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And again, I've told you that I really enjoyed your book. What would you like for our listeners to take away from your book, and why should they read it?
I think they should read it because it's an excellent book for people who are just getting started in their crafting of spiritual practice, quite literally.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's in a witchcraft framework, it works for anybody, and you don't even have to believe in a deity to get a lot out of it, which I think is important. And what I want all of us to know and to remember is that we are magnificent embodied beings who have the power by just being born into this world to make amazing positive changes for ourselves and the world around us.
Well said. Well, I'm very excited. Thank you so much for coming on this podcast, and I'm very excited about your next book. So you have to promise me, I hope you had a great time, that you'll come back and tell us about
your
book.
Oh, I will.
I'm very, very excited, and best wishes for the future. And remember, everyone, if you would like to get a copy of Lisa's book, it is A Witch's Guide to Crafting Your Practice, Create a Magical Path That Works for You by Lisa McSherry. And you can obviously go to www.llewellyn.com, but also Amazon. And you also can go to her website, which is lisamcsherry.com. And you can also get information about purchasing her book there. So thank you so much. And good luck with your
new
book.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Besides Lisa, I want to thank Stephen, our sound engineer, for his technical expertise. And I'd like to thank all of you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of all of our shows here on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, or CSNP. Join us on February 7th for another episode of Circle Talk. If you've attended PSG in the last 5 years, you may have taken a workshop presented by our guest next on February 7th. It's Phoenix Silverstar. We're going to be talking about her new book, Spells from Scratch, so please join us. I look forward to being with you all again, so please come back. Good night, everyone, and blessed be.